Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings.
Occupations wait. As we examine, study, and analyze the events in Gaza and Israel today, we learn of the length taken by the occupation as it dominates the land space of Gaza and the Palestinian territories.
Greetings, family. We are now on live.
Speaking of what is, in fact, the seizure and taking of another people's land by military means. Cameroonian philosopher Achille Mbembe, in his remarkable book, Necropolitics, writes keenly and deeply of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and provides dazzling insights into the origins and drives operating beneath the roof of consciousness. First and foremost, Mbembe explains, we find separation. This is followed by the creation of an enclave or separate space, and next, the destruction of those deemed enemies of the state. This separation state, Mbembe tells us, is a master desire to dominate an other who then faces subjugation, which leads further to a desire to destroy. And Mbembe writes, tellingly, that, and this is a quote, occupation is, in every respect, hand-to-hand combat and a tunnel. Please note that his book was published initially in French in 2016. And Mbembe writes, the colonial enterprise was driven by a mixture of sadism and masochism, applied gropingly and in response to largely unexpected events. It was inclined to smash all forces standing in the way of its drives, to inhibit their course toward all sorts of perverse pleasures. The limits to what it considered normal were constantly shifting, and few desires were subject to straightforward repression, let alone embarrassment or disgust. The colonial world's capacity to cope with the distraction of its objects, natives included, was astonishing. Mbembe, page 45-46. Achille Mbembe, like many African scholars, activists and thinkers, look at the settler colonial setup in Palestine and see apartheid. But if so, it's apartheid with a difference. In South Africa, the system needed African labor to build its wealth. Israel doesn't need Palestinian labor. It seeks their land, making the people superfluous and therefore in a worse and weaker position. With love, Afir. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings to everyone. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Ipris Chi, and of course, we are commemorating Black History Month, Black History Month 2024. And, you know, we always commemorate Black history every day, but, you know, sometimes you have to do a little special something, something. And so that is what we're going to be doing this month. At any rate, moving right along, we just heard from none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. And with that said, very shortly, we are going to talk to a sister, a warrior sister. In fact, you know, one of my definitely beloved sisters, and we're talking about Sister Pam Africa. She'll be joining us very shortly. She's going to give us an update about what's going on with Mumia Abu-Jamal, and unfortunately, it is not good news, which is why we have to make certain that we bring to your attention what it is that we need to now know and certainly what we must now prepare to do. Needless to say, free all of our political prisoners, call in the cry of the day. And I dare say that Black folks, with this being Black History Month, perhaps we need to up the ante a little bit in the fact that Mumia Abu-Jamal and all of our political prisoners have, in fact, made incredible history. And so we want to not wait until they become ancestors in order to recognize their work, accomplishments, contributions, and sacrifices. So again, very shortly, we're going to be talking with our sister Pam Africa. Mama Pam is like what she likes to be now, Warrior Pam. We're going to also do part two of our conversation from last week. And of course, we're talking about Dr. Motula Shakur and of course his incredible work and certainly what he brings to us today with his students now representing in full force. And we're talking about, of course, the acupuncture group, the Black acupuncturist, and of course, Dr. Kokai Patterson will be joining us very shortly to tell us more about not only the work of Dr. Motula Shakur and, of course, the incredible program that he initiated 40-plus years ago, but also now what some of the students and some of his allies and associates are now bringing forward. One of the things that we want to share with you, family, is as we prepare to talk to Dr. Kokai, we want to share with you something that's going on right here in Philadelphia, and I dare say in other locations as well. But I think Philadelphia has probably been selected as ground zero now for a serious, we might want to say epidemic when it comes to drug, not only addiction, but when you see what it is you're going to see and hear, certainly we notice something is coming. Now, I'm going to play a couple of clips while we're waiting for Sister Pam to join us. And this is happening right here, right now in Philadelphia. And so we're going to hear a report from something that happened here. Hold on a minute. Let me cue this up. Something that has been going on here in Philly for a minute. And again, it appears from the reports that this is perhaps more critical than in other cities at this point in time. But certainly we anticipate that this is going to happen all over the country. Now, note, right now it appears that it is affecting more of the European, Caucasoid people. Hold on 1 minute, I'm trying to cue this up. Okay, there we go. And so if this is what's going on in their community and amongst their people, then you can imagine what's getting ready to come to our community. So I want you to check this out. For those of you who cannot see it, you certainly will be able to hear it. So check this out. On 1 moment.
Hey, my name is Rob. I'm in Kensington, Philadelphia. North Philadelphia, to be exact, somewhat. It's known for a lot of drug use, crime, drug use, prostitution.
What are the most popular drugs here right now?
The train, the dope, and the fit. No, just doing them dirty, like bad. Like, my mother's from down here. My mother used to do every drug in the book. Glad to say she's cleaned up everything. So, me, when I was a child, my mother was out here doing dope. She did not look like this. She had a couple track marks. She had a couple little sores and everything, but her limbs wasn't falling off. It was real bad. Like, you can smell them when they walk past. Like,
do you guys believe addiction is a disease?
Yes, it is.
Some people want to get off drugs, but they're so deep into it, they can't. No matter how hard they try, they've been doing it for so long, it becomes a part of them.
What do you think the solution for someone who's that far in the lifestyle of drug addiction?
Well, behind it, I don't think there's no solution. Then they're going to do it till they die.
There's a fight right behind us. All right, that's it. You got it. That's it. That's it. You steal her? You can't steal. You can't steal. Dive in. No more. Get up. Go.
This is a typical day in Kensington, a neighborhood in Philadelphia. 400 to 800 people are on the streets here looking for their next high.
What's your name?
Bud.
How long you been out here?
Almost 4 years. I think it's crazy. Real.
When do you think you first started doing drugs?
I tried drugs when I was 18. I used heroin until I was 23. So in that period of time, you can kind of see when the writing's on the wall. You know, it's a spiral downward. Eventually, it takes you to somewhere like this. Honestly, if I'm being truthful, I'm probably going to have to get arrested to stop. But when I do get arrested, it's at that point, you know, I'd like to move forward into sobriety. I've had 5 years clean, 2 years clean, a year and a half clean. Hi, Mom. I'm okay. Love you.
From the dead, you'll be saved. We are all the same. We have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And like I said before, at the foot of the cross, there's no racism. There's no gender.
There's no gender?
There is no, let me repeat that. There is gender, but there is no difference in salvation with respect to gender. If you're a man, you get saved. If you're a woman, you get saved. Let me tell you something. A man will not get to heaven if he's a and doesn't repent of his
Do you use any of the harm reduction services they offer out here?
Yeah, we use the needle exchange. Then with harm reduction, they offer like wound care.
What's going on with the wound on your leg, man?
So what it is a sore that's caused by an abscess.
How does that happen?
We're not really sure, to be honest. Most of us think it's the trank that does it.
The dangerous street drug component is officially called xylazine, nicknamed trank, as in tranquilizer. For people who use illicit drugs, it is an X factor, both unseen and possibly fatal.
City officials and the Fed say trank is being mixed with opioids.
My name is Rosalyn Picardo, founder of Operation Saver City. I work with families of homicide victims, and I'm a harm reductionist.
So what is xylazine?
So xylazine is like a tranquilizer, not made for human consumption, it's made for animals. We use on mice, we use on, it's like a sedative that's made it into the drug supply. I mean, it's been here for 6 years, but we're seeing it a lot more now.
A drug commonly used to sedate horses is now being linked to overdose deaths across the country.
Trank was detected in 34% of all overdose deaths in 2021.
It's like a vasoconstrictor, it constricts your veins, and it just makes it hard to circulate. And then next thing you know, you got infection, you have amputation, you have rotting skin.
They say that, like, the filler is, like, really acidic. Like, when you get a cut, it's, like, almost like the acid tries to get out of your system, like, through, like, the weak point or something in your veins, you know? So it's, like, these wounds, they don't heal, man. I've had this on my leg for, like, over a year, same size, man.
Have you attempted to get any, like, health care for it?
Nothing official. You know, but I do take care of it. Clean gauze, soap and water, meta honey.
So I have a lot of wound care supplies. I had a lot of snacks, socks. It's just not enough. We may have like maybe 6-17 out here from different hospitals, but it's just more or less the magnitude of people that are here coming from all over the country to consume this stuff that's not made for human consumption. I would say 70% are not from here. 70-80% are not from here.
I'm from Baltimore. I went to rehab like a month ago, and I ended up leaving with a girl that's from here, and been here ever since, and basically got stuck down here. I got a family back home in Baltimore with 3 kids, and it's just different, like totally different. We took a trip back one time and got the dope, and it does nothing now. So basically, I'm up here because this shit is fucking different. Like,
they come here because we have that good shit. You know, they come here because we got that good drug.
It is wild, bro. I've never seen something like this shit ever in my life. Like Baltimore's ran by the gangs and shit. Like, Train ain't even hit Baltimore yet. Like, I'm telling you, when it hits Baltimore, that shit's about to be a war zone because nothing else can get anybody high.
What's going on with your right arm here, man?
And somebody missed, and I ended up getting a blood infection, and I was septic. Like, last week, I was in ICU for 4 days.
You know what might have caused it?
Shrink and a soap.
What about you, man?
Well, my knee is mangled because when I was getting hit, somebody was hitting me,
where I think. I mean, that's what they saying, Holmes. I'm going on like 3 weeks. And I'm drinking nasty shit. It's that animal type of language. I was used on horses. You can look around and see and go, ooh. Ultimately, it's not that person's fault. Take the fucking drink away. My fucking legs are off. My parents buy it. I wash, clean, put antibiotic fucking ointment on it, wrap it every day. Every time I can, I'm in that shower. This has been here for 5 fucking months.
The flesh-eating condition caused by Trank is referred to as necrotizing fasciitis. This condition was mentioned briefly during my visit to a harm reduction facility in San Francisco.
Necrotizing fasciitis, which is a flesh-eating disease.
But I wanted to learn more about what's actually going on beneath the skin when you see these types of lesions. So I found a dermatologist named Dr. Cartwright to help break it down.
Sure, I'm Martina Cartwright. I'm the Vice President of Medical Affairs for a small dermatology company. Xylazine is not an opioid. It's actually an anesthetic.
Okay. Give me a moment. I want to X that out. Okay. So as you can tell, this is something really, really devastating, as with all kinds of drug addictions, but this is something really different, needless to say. And again, as you heard, and for some that are listening, I mean, that are able to see it in Zoom, you saw for yourself, the majority of the group of people that it's affecting presently is European people. So again, you can imagine if that's what's going on here and in a few other locations to that degree, then you can only imagine what's getting ready to come to our communities. It is no way that they're letting that happen in their communities like that to that degree, and you not think something is not going to happen in the Black community in particular. This just gives you a general idea as to what is about to come, family. And again, the question has to be, hey, Brother Ray Ray, see you in the house. The question has to be, what are we going to do? Because it's coming. It's more than obvious. And you see, this is very, very different. This is flesh eating. This is all kinds of, well, for those who couldn't see, you're in our New Day chat and so forth, podcast, you can't see it. But again, we can tell you it is just horrific, and that puts it mildly. So again, when we talk to Dr. Kokai and the group from the ADS, we are going to go more into why it is so important that we get prepared and get ready for what we know is the inevitable. We've seen crack cocaine in our community. Well, looking at what we just saw and heard with fentanyl and track, family, I'm just saying we better get ready. And so again, to get the information from Dr. Kokai and our brothers and sisters in the acupuncture world group, et cetera, is right on time. Before we move forward, I want to give a big shout out. Sister Janae is in the house. Greetings to you, my sister. And, of course, Brother Lumumba is here. And, again, you mentioned Brother Ray Ray is with us as well. And those of you who are on Facebook, we thank you for joining us as well as our regular folk in the New Day chat. Okay. So let's see if we have Sister Pam with us yet. Let's see. Sister Pam, I'm scrolling through. I don't see you just yet, but if I'm missing you, you can press 1 now, and we'll certainly get ready to bring you in. In the meantime, let's go to a quick call. If you have a comment or a thought, caller, you are at 4298. Let's go with a few brief comments. At 4298, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Thank you, Empress. My name is Robert Moses. I'd like to address that one of the pandemics we're faced with today, this apartheid in the U.S. of A. The huge story and the her-it ages of apartheid in the USA, the history and heritage of apartheid in the USA. It has been correctly stated that black skin will never be free until white skin is also free. The history of apartheid is the story of economic opportunism, and the history of apartheid is the story of denial and hatred. A thorough analysis of the exploited system of apartheid reveals that it is fascism. That is, apartheid is fascism, and fascism is the open tyranny with tyranny of finance capital. Thus, apartheid is an organization of race hatred, and this system attempts to purify one people at the cost of another. It is an unjust and evil system of death and exploitation attempting to thrive on the labor power of black workers and Anglo workers. Black freedom-loving people in the USA will continue to fight beside our Anglo freedom-loving brothers and sisters until this system of exploitation is discredited and abandoned. It is a system which attempts to divide us, leave our children without a legitimate father, and perpetuate anarchy within our family, anarchy within our nation, and unleash anarchy within the government. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey, over there on Baltimore Avenue.
All right, my brother. Thank you. All right. And again, you know, it's... Oh, wait a minute. I'm hearing someone. Not sure who. Okay, let's... All right, very good. All right, so, you know, again, as we all know, we are humanitarians, and of course, we're very concerned about everyone to some degree, but it is certainly time that we be very clear about what it is that we need to do for our people at this particular point in time, and that is our mission, and that is our commitment. And so as we continue on, we are going to really look closer at how certain things are affecting us. Give me one moment. Yes, Sister Pam.
Yes. Are we on?
You're this is my regular phone line. I need you to call into the radio program.
What's the number?
319-527-6189. 215. Hold on 1 minute, because we're on the air right now, so give me 1 minute. Okay, family, give me 1 minute, and we're going to bring someone in to kind of talk with you briefly while I give Sister Pam this number. Hold on 1 moment. Caller, you are at 6185. 6185, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day.
Yes, sister, living on the front line.
All right. Greetings, brother. You have a question or comment?
I have some heartbreaking news. That's the heartbreaking news for the planet Earth. The new drug, well, it's not a new drug. It's been there since day one. But the drug of choice and the drug that's killing more people than any manifesto drug is called sex. Did you know it takes 60 to 100 drops of blood to make one drop of sperm to a man? So when you think you're knocking out the park is knocking out of you. It's killing us 2, 3, 4 times a night. It's death. That's why when a man climax, he goes to sleep because his blood that he's scrutin. And Google it. How many drops of blood does it take to make one drop of sperm? 60 to 100 drops. Not the total amount of semen. The one drop of that is 60 to 100 drops of blood, and it's killing. I'm blowing the horn. Nobody loves sex more than me. I've been celibate for 6 years, so I don't miss it. But now that I know that it's killing us and it's ageless, look it up. Look it up for yourself. And one other thing. Pam, it's good to hear your voice tonight. Glad when I saw you, Pam, for the 30th and Market, 38th and Market with Dick Gregory. Well, I got you and your husband backstage to meet Dick.
All right, my brother. Listen, Pam is getting ready to call in now. So listen,
I saw Pam. I got Pam in to the concert with Dick Gregory. I took her now.
Okay, but she's getting ready to call in now. So we need to go to her line. She's calling in now. Okay, moving right along. moving right along, the thing that we want to also mention about this particular drug, brother, you could not see the photos, the film that we were showing, but I think if you were able to see what we were able to present, you would kind of stay focused on the devastation of that particular drug, because it eats your skin and it creates all kinds of sores. So again, you know, we want to stay focused on what's really getting ready to come into our communities that is going to create a devastation in our communities. Okay, let me see if this is Sister Pam here. We're going to go to caller at 6029. Your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Hello?
6029.
Hello?
Are you there?
I'm not 6029. Hello?
Is it Sister Pam?
Hello?
Yes. Your mic is open.
Clay? This is Clay.
Yes.
This is Pam Africa.
All right, Sister Pam.
Okay.
Greetings.
You know what?
You are
on a different. Okay, I got on a different phone, so that's why the number didn't register. I don't know how many people are familiar with what's happening with Mumia right now, but we had put out an emergency alert to put pressure on the prison, and because Mumia, when I went to visit him, and he's getting sick. We don't have much time, right, Sister Filet?
We have as much time as we need. We have as much time as we need.
Oh, okay. So first I want to start off by saying that it was the event planned for this weekend, for Sunday, and it's completely sold out. And it was with Cornel West, Professor Mark Lamont Hill, Sister Abba Wale, myself, and what we all come together in order to put out an emergency alert for people to come together about the health of Mumia. Sister Pelé?
Okay, so what exactly is going on with Mumia now, Pam? Are you there? Okay, we are having some technical difficulties. Let's see if I can up something that might help. Pam, can you hear me? Are you there? Okay.
Hello?
All right. Yes, can you hear me? Pam? All right, family, we are having some technical difficulties. So what I'm going to try to do is queue up an interview that Sister Pam did a few days ago, actually. And so if you all would just give me a few moments, what I'm going to do in the meantime while I queue that up, I'm going to find for you one of the other topics we wanted to focus on tonight as we talk about Mumia. We're going to also talk about how we need to bring forward more serious kinds of politicians. Now, you might think that's a little off from the conversation, but I want to share with you, and we're going to go more into this tomorrow, but I want to share with you a politician that was here in Philadelphia. And that particular politician, his name is David P. Richardson. And again, tomorrow We're going to talk more about him on the Black Power Radio. But here's the connection. Many people are going to be voting or asked to vote in the next few months and certainly November. But also we've got to look at in our communities that there are folks who are selling us out, have sold us out, and are selling us out. But I want to share with you, hold on one moment, hold on. Oh, here we go. I want to share with you a politician that we had here in Philadelphia and why, in fact, it's so important that we also now bring forward kinds of political representatives in our communities. Here's an example of that.
On the move. As-salamu alaykum. Prima Mia. Prima Mia. Prima Mia. Prima Mia now. Brothers and sisters, comrades, it's certainly my pleasure to be here. One of your state representatives from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I am ashamed to be a state representative in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a chump like Governor Riz at the helm. I'm ashamed. But I wanted to come here today to let you know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our mind. But we must understand that we are freedom fighters first, and then all the other things come next. Then I'm a black man first, and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because of freedom ain't going to never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's going to come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fools, and understand this man has no respect for you, none. None whatsoever. And they will continue to do what they do to Fumia only because they feel that you don't have no heart. Well, let me just say this to y'all. I want to send a message to the FOP. I want to make it loud and clear so there won't be any mistake about what's being said today. And I'm saying it as a black man in the city of Philadelphia and not as the state representative. I ain't scared the hell of y'all. And I'm not going to let you intimidate our people either. That's over. So when you come on with some threat about you want to boycott every event that we had and you want to stop the people from coming and contribute their money, get the hell out of our way because we ain't going nowhere. The time has come for everybody to wake up and realize that this ain't no joke. We're not going to let you take Mumia's life. And we want to send a message to America that the death penalty has got to end. We want to wipe it out the same way they did in South Africa. But they did it by power of the people. When Nelson Mandela stepped out of jail and threw his hands up in the air, he was a strong brother. After 27 years being in jail, they didn't cripple his spirit. And I want to let all of you know that come from all across the country, you got some brothers and sisters in Philadelphia that are willing to rumble no matter what and ain't afraid of the Philadelphia police, the national police, the FOP, and all the rest of them that come together with us. Because we know in Philadelphia that there have been some strong brothers and sisters in the Philadelphia Police Department who are African-American, who have stood up and have said that they, in fact, are against the death penalty, and they, in fact, want a new trial for Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. Not only did it come from the National Association of Black Police Officers, but it also came from the Philadelphia Guard and Civic League. And I want to put that on the record here today. In my conclusion, I just want to say, I know the time has been rough today, but a lot of y'all need to know what this looks like for many of us here in the city of Philadelphia. Governor Ridge is getting a message again. Not only did those 115,000 calls run, that's an underestimated of the number that has been calling, as an underestimated number of those who signed petitions, as an underestimated number of those who come in and out of the city of Philadelphia from all across this country to give the kind of solidarity that's needed in order to make sure we free Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. We're not going to take this lying down. And I know that Mumia in his heart knows that we're all with him. So brothers and sisters, we're here as freedom fighters and black liberation strugglers who understand the importance of who is what we are, and we ain't gonna let no titles get in the way. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. No justice. No justice. As-salamu alaykum.
With Home Chef? Home
Cooking is so simple. You go from step
All right.
one to done.
Here we go. All right, family. So there you heard David Richardson. He was, of course, a state rep here in Philadelphia. And we have to ask ourselves, where are our political representatives today? Now, before we go to that question, and Brother Ray, we're going to come to you next. But before we go to that question, I want to share with you some words from Sister Pam Africa that we do have recorded that will provide some insight into the situation of Mumia Abu-Jamal at this point. Check this out.
My name is Noelle Hanrahan. I'm a lawyer and a private investigator, and I work with Prison Radio, and I'm here with Pam Africa from the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Pam, what's the latest?
Right. Last week, I had a phone call that came in from Wadia Jamal's oldest son, and he had just left from visiting Mumia, and he was really upset. In fact, she said he left there crying, going down the hall. When he got to his car, he said he was so messed up when he turned his car on, he had to stop because he was crying uncontrollably. And because Mumia looked just that bad. And his hair had came out, but the most important thing, it wasn't the fact that Mumia's hair was gone, and it was the rash, and this black rash was starting on his face. And he had seen where Mumia had scratched so much that his eyebrows, half of them was gone. And that Mumia itched continuously, 24/7. He had a terrible itch there. And it was very alarming for me. So I contacted, several of the people that work around Mumia and made arrangements to go up to the prison in our last Monday, this Monday, this past, and I was shocked when I saw Mumia. He was thin, he had lost a lot of weight, and when he talked about the rash, it brought back to my mind when we were fighting and all this government and all to stop them from murdering Mumia through medical neglect. As I sat here, watching Mumia, and when you hear Mumia on his podcast with Mark Lamont Hill, you would have no idea. You could not place the face, the face of Mumia, the body of Mumia, with what you're hearing on the radio, because you're thinking that, he's well. This government is slowly, purposely killing Mumia through medical neglect. I'm talking about his diet, which Noelle would, talk more about. And on the fact that he does not get proper yard out, he has a bad heart, and they're not giving him the proper diet, the proper things that he needs to survive. And most of all, I want people to understand, this should happen to no one, but Mumia is 100% innocent. You will see, through years, all the illegal things they have done to keep him in jail. But at this particular time, I know what I am thinking. My dear son, Issa, he knew what he was thinking. They are torturing. When you itch 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and as we're speaking, William is being tortured right now. There's not a part of his body that doesn't itch, that he's not digging and clawing at. We need help. We need help. We need help getting him a diet, while we're working, and we got to pick up the work. We really got to pick up the work, because when you have the evidence of innocence, we must put the pressure on this government to release this proven innocent man. Judge Griffin, from Arkansas, said that these people have a bloodlust, and that's what they have, a bloodlust. They have a vengeance. Mumia is, a Black Panther, he's been supportive of the Move organization, for years. Mumia is an icon in the world community for the work that he has done for mankind, for humanity. And these people want to kill him. And they're doing it. They're slowly doing it. You know, we've had an operation where the guard described who was, you know, went to Mumia to get this operation on his heart. And seeing Mumia's heart beating on the table, Mumia, you know, on a, you know, on a gurney or wherever the medical table. And, you know, and that night in him, he was, you know, it almost made him sick to be in the room, you know, to see this. And pictures of Mumia from 2023 last year, and that will go up on the world site and other sites, and to show people the decline in health of Mumia. And so we're asking people to rise up and do the right thing. And go to your, you know, congressman, you know, call the prison, and you know, do whatever necessary. This is just the beginning of this particular battle. We'll have more details on what it is that everybody can do. Noel, talk now, and I'll share the time with Noel. But please, I'm telling you what I see, and he should never reach the where he reached last year, I mean, a couple of years ago. You know, his body can take much more. And I got to say this, Christmas in Noel.
Yeah.
Maureen Sparks, the day that Mumia was released from death row, and the day that Mumia was granted an appeal by Judge Tucker, you know, he said very clearly about the work that they was going to do. Once he went to general population, you know, he said he'll give his just due. And, you know, that he's going to burn in hell. You know, we're still talking about an innocent person. You know, and that's when Mumia started getting sick. Mumia had been in jail for over 30 years at that point. And yes, he had colds and things like that. But once he hit general population, when they found out that he was just sick, that he was just in general population, you know, that's when his sickness started. And then when he went, when Judge Tucker gave him the law for an appeal, that's when they stepped up, and I'll go more into detail about that later, you know, but they are determined to kill Mumia. We must stop what is wrong. We couldn't do nothing about Malcolm because we didn't know the plot, we didn't know the plan. We could not do anything about Shaka Bear because the same thing. And our Martin Luther King, but we do know. And we're witnessing what is going on here. It is time for us to rise up and tell them, hell no.
Okay, this is Noel Hammerhand.
All right. That, of course, was Sister Pam Africa. That was something that she recorded earlier. I'm not sure what was going on with the audio or with the connection with the phone. We were trying to get her live, but something was going on with the connection. So we're going to still try to connect with her before tonight's program is over. But if not, you at least got some idea as to what is going on with Mumia. I do have a photo or two, but I cannot show it yet until she, you know, conveys that I can share it with you. But I can tell you that it's not good. His skin is like, it looks almost like a leathery, lizardy kind of skin, and it's all over his body. And, you know, he's almost unrecognizable. So, you know, this is very, very serious. But I'm going to hold that point for a few moments, and I'm going to still work on trying to get Sister Pam to join us live because, again, I think it's very important that she conveys to you directly, you know, what her visit entailed in talking to Mumia. At any rate, I do believe Dr. Kokai is with us, and let me see. Dr. Kokai, you need to press 1 if you're in the chat, not the chat, but in our regular New Day blog, you need to press 1. Okay, I think I see you there. And we were trying to get you in on our Zoom, but I guess we have to go ahead and get you in on our blog. So let's do that. We're ready to bring Dr. Kokai in. And again, we're going to continue what we started last week, family, with talking about the great work of Dr. Motula Shakur. And as we kind of heard earlier when we opened up, this new drug that is out now, and I mean, it's not like it's like new, but it seems like they're adding new stuff all the time, because before, in more recent time, it was the fentanyl mixed with heroin. Well, now they're literally mixing an animal tranquilizer, hence TREC. That is, I mean, for those of you who were able to see in the Zoom room, you saw the devastation of what it does to your body. I mean, this is beyond what we saw with heroin. This is something totally different. And again, if this is what's going on in communities that are predominantly European or Caucasian or white, what do you think what is they get ready to bring into the black community? So again, to get this information on how we need to be prepared, how we need to also work on our health as it presently is, bringing it up to par or to a more advanced level of productivity and capability. So with that said, we're going to bring in Dr. Kokai joining us again this week as we get ready to bring to Philly and other cities in our communities the capability to not only know thyself, to heal thyself. Let's open up Dr. Kokai's mic, and here we are. Greetings to you, Dr. Kokai. How are you this evening?
Peace, and blessings, my dear sister, Empress Chi. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Kokai, I'm not sure if you heard when we opened up. We opened up with a couple of clips that focused on this thing called fentanyl and crack.
Yep.
I'm not sure if you're on speaker, you may have to come off speakerphone because I'm getting a little feedback. Okay.
How's that?
But great. There you go. We got it now.
Yeah.
But we literally showed some clips on our Zoom that showed the skin and showed, just the spores and other things that's now happening. Now, in Philly, there's approximately four blocks. Now, listen carefully. This is not like you go to one location and, it's your shoot-up place or whatever. We're talking about four straight blocks where they literally are on the street. You hear me? I mean, it is like the walking zombies. They're there all night, all day, it is just horrific. So, Dr. Kokai, before you tell us more about Dr. Motula and the detox, give me some thoughts about this new drug, this new thing that they've got going on. Give us some thoughts about that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Let me first, shout out to Pam, my dear sister. I just want to thank her for her tenacity and thank her for never, looking the other way in terms of dealing with our struggle, and in particular with our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal. I just want to thank her. I love her so much for the deep love that she has for people. And, that love is a warrior spirit love, too. So, Pam, I love you so much, sis, and thank you so much. So, again, talking about the drugs, a little slight caveat. I'm 71, be 72 coming up. In 1960s, I was an alcoholic at age 13, and I began to use heroin at age 15, shooting dope up. And methadone came out. I went into the methadone program and got addicted to the methadone. In order to get off of the methadone at 17 years of age, I went back to shooting heroin. That was the only way at that time that I could get off the methadone, because it was that addictive and there was no process, and it had just been introduced in 1968-69. Now, fast forward, that was the heroin thing that was going on in our community and devastated our community and shut us down, to quiet us up when we began to raise some hell in the community and, began to fight for ourselves, and they blanketed us with the heroin just like the British did, as you talked about the four blocks in Philly, just like the British did
with the opium, and the whole country was doped up. So after the heroin comes what? PCP. Then comes the crack cocaine piece. So each generation got worse and worse in the poor communities. Now, remember, this is more devastating in the poor community where we already got an illiteracy problem, where we already got a domestic violence problem, where we already have, you know, employment issues, et cetera. And we got so much deviation that's going on as a result of people using drugs. They don't think right. They do all kinds of crazy stuff. So we got heroin to PCP to crack cocaine. Then we got the ecstasy. We got all these other drugs and chemicals. And now we look up and we got all of those things, cigarettes, alcohol, drugs. Now we got fentanyl. Now we have a synthetic drug. And in 2023, normally we have 20 to 30,000 ODs nationwide in terms of deaths. 23, we're in 24, I'm sorry, 2022, because they haven't calculated 23 yet, we had over 100,000 people die just from fentanyl alone. So this is the devastation that it is wreaking, and as you talked about the damage that it does internally and externally to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Today, as you know, we're always in the community doing AccuDetox. In the hood. Today in Washington, D.C., we went to a place called Jurassic Park. So you can imagine, you know, what kind of place this is, Jurassic Park. And one of our imams fed the people, and the ADS Collective did AccuDetox. We treated probably about 40 people that day. But as I was on the mic speaking, a brother walked up and was sniffing dope right in our face. And I turned to him, and I said, hey, brother, what you doing? And I handed the mic to somebody and walked over to him, and I said, hey, bro, you came to me. You would get off my face. You know, of course the brothers came, and, you know, we talked to him. But after we finished talking to him, we set him down and gave him treatment. The next thing you know, he was the coolest cat out there that day, you know, and this is the kind of work that we need to do. So the fentanyl is very, very devastating. We got babies, you know, who find it and take it, and they die, you know, as a result of the power of that drug and its ability in small amounts to cause death, you know, and to cause some kinds of irreversible harm, et cetera, not to mention the damage, you know, that it's doing to all the internal organs, the liver, you know, which is the major detoxifying organ, as well as the kidney, as those fluids have to run through there and people are not eating right. As you talked about, again, our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, we want to send prayers out for him, just as we did for Dr. Matulu Shakur. So the nutrition that folk are doing out there in the street on that block that you talking about, those four blocks, they're not eating anything but candy bars and, you know, whatever they can eat, French fries or whatever they can get. And that's the same diet that's in the penitentiary. So how do we expect Dr. Shakur and, you know, all the other brothers and sisters in there, Mumia, et cetera, to be able to heal? And we know, as Pam stated, this is all by design. So it's so important for everybody, as she stated, to call your senator, to call your governor, to send letters to the White House, whatever the case may be, to get our brother out. And at the same time, demand that we have holistic services to deal with these substance abuse problems in our community. We don't need the conventional program where a person goes in and they're addicted to, you know, fentanyl, and somebody's just talking to them and send them back out, in-and-out programs. Or we take that person and put them on another drug, you know, to substitute for that drug. So it's the same concept, you know, nowadays that we're going to use specific drugs to get people off of drugs as opposed to a natural, holistic, drug-free approach looking for a drug-free lifestyle.
Ashe. So, Dr. Kokai, again, as we now see what is going on here in Philly is really, we're calling it almost like ground zero, because we haven't seen any city yet that has been hit the way this has, and it's rapidly growing, unfortunately, to a greater extent. I got a report the other day with a sister, a black woman, who unfortunately was pregnant. And, you know, they were interviewing her, and you know, she was talking about how she got on it, by way of depression. You know, she lost her her fiance, her home, and then, of course, you know, ended up getting on this drug, and she's pregnant now. And so the interviewer was trying to convey to her that, you know, you need to think about the child. And so I'm like, what part of this do he not get? That when you're on something like, you can't think about anything but how you're going to get the next hit, right?
That's right.
And so we saw this, as you mentioned, we saw this before with the crack cocaine.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, Baba, they're literally, for those who use public transportation, you cannot be on, particularly near the evening, you cannot be on public transportation, on the trains in particular. That's how bad this is now.
Wow.
They have taken over the train, the public transit system. You literally can see people shooting up on the train, the regular you know, train that runs through Philadelphia. This is how bad, and they ride from one end to the other end, so that way you're able
on
to stay on more or less. Right. And I'm telling you, just literally you can sit there and watch them shooting up. And then also the ones that don't, it's the way this drug has been going, you could be standing there. It's like heroin, but they literally will fall over. I'm not understanding how you don't fall all the way. It seems like they will fall over and will almost touch the ground, falling over, won't fall all the way down.
That's that's right.
It's like an exophatic kind of thing.
We call that, the nod, you know, when you bend all the way down like that because your body is totally relaxed from the drugs, you have no control over it, and you go all the way down, and then your body gets to a certain point, and it jacks back up. You know, again, that's the unconsciousness, you know, that people practice when they are, you know, affected by this drug. And as you talked about, it's so powerful that the addiction, you know, just grabs them by their throat. When I was talking to this brother today, he was just looking at me like he was looking through me. You know, his eyes were just a gaze, you know, and his pants was hanging down, his drawers was all out, you know, and, you know, he was like, he didn't even hear what I was saying. And then one of the sisters came over, older sister, you know, my young man, and it was almost like it was his mother. And he said, oh, okay, I'll do it. You know, but again, you know, spirit can break through these things. And this is why I say we have to have the holistic approach to deal with this fentanyl. So if you just go at it, conventional mental health approach, you know, and not looking at the politics involved in this, but not looking at the culture, you know, looking at our communities and educating the young people about why these things exist. And this is what they don't do in these programs. They don't talk about capitalism. They don't talk about dope is death, which is a piece that the New York 21 did back in the day with Michael Fetcherwood Tabor. And he talked about capitalism attached to this. And as you were saying earlier, by design, the whole idea is to control the community, to kill people. Now, I have been talking very, very toughly to the brothers, to the black men, as well as our sisters in the community, and telling the brothers every time I said it is not something that we would want them to do. But this is an order. This is a demand. This is a command that every black man in the community, I don't care what level of community you're in, middle class, poor community, you know, upper middle class community, if you're involved in protecting your community, if you're involved in building our community, it becomes your responsibility to grab a young man, to grab a young woman, because we got all these young girls out here using the drug and being influenced by these drugs, and all kinds of things are happening behind closed doors to our little girls. And I'm talking about the 15, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olders that are out there. Well, Doc, why you say that? Every Sunday, Sister Empress, Wednesday, I go to a healthy babies program, me and my students, the young ladies that you see hanging with me, and we go over there and we talk to young girls, about 7 or 8 of them in one facility at a time, who have babies and are pregnant, you know, or whatever the case may be, 17, 16, on up to 19 years of age. And when we talk to them, you can see that they have not took the time to read, to study, to work on themselves. The behavior is just off the chain, and they think it's normal for them to act a certain kind of way. They don't know how to take care of the babies. 2 weeks ago, we're finishing doing acupuncture on the young ladies and their babies. We put ear seeds in the babies, too, because some of the babies, as a result of the abuse from the boyfriend, from the drugs, autistic, ADD, ADHD, and other kinds of conditions you see with those babies. So we treat the babies also. We were leaving about 2 weeks ago, and the women came running back. Dr. Kakai, there's a dude out here beating on. We run outside, and it's a young teenage boy beating on a 17-year-old pregnant girl just sitting in there talking to. And we run out to the street, and the guy goes in his hip with, like, got a gun kind of thing. And I'm like, everybody, get back, you know. And Sister Empress, this is only God working like this. We got close enough up on the dude, you know, and one of our sisters walked right through the crowd, walked right up to the dude, grabbed the sister and said, you're not taking our sister. I said, sister, if you don't get out of there. But this is the kind of action that needs to take place. She was a bold sister. She was totally out of order. I told her, don't you ever do that again. But Allah and God was with her. So everybody on this call, y'all need to not be scared. You need to know that you can go out and you can talk to these people. Today I got threatened twice while I was on the mic talking about black men standing up there. Self, some brother said, oh, nigga, go ahead with that. And I turned to him, I said, brother, you're supposed to be supporting me. Oh, you better cook this shit up, nigga, before I slice you up. This is, they said this straight, like you said, sister, that four-block radius. They don't care. They will say whatever they want to say. And he's standing right in the midst of some progressive brothers. I had 6, 7, 8 dudes around me, and he still said it. And the dudes walked up to him and said, hey, man, don't do this. Man, don't do this. I mean, this fentanyl, and this is the dude that was on fentanyl I'm talking about. This fentanyl has got these brothers and sisters acting totally insane. So it's imperative, you all, that's on this call. You know, Sister Empress is not doing this just for the purpose of educating you all. It's for the purposes of empowering you. So if the education is not going to empower you and get you motivated even more, because I know if you're on her call that you are involved in our community, but we have to step it up a notch, sis. We got to step it up a notch, family. This is why Empress has got us on this call, and we continue to do what we do, you know. And she has not let up. She continues to step it up. You know, we got the Million Women's Anniversary thing coming up, and we pumped up talking to all the young ladies. But this is what it's going to take to be able to deal with the drug problem. We got to organize the sisters. The sisters are being abused. They're being raped, you know, by our men and by these young boys. And nobody's saying anything. When I said that today, dude told me, oh, man, go ahead with that. So I said to the young lady that I was with, I said, you know, he's an abuser, you know, kind of thing. So, again, these are the things that we have to deal with. And the drugs are at the base of this. The drugs are the major culprit in this, because if we try to work on ourselves and there's some drugs in our bodies, family, y'all need to understand this. If we're trying to work on ourselves and better ourselves, and then there's a substance that we put in our body that changes our mood, if we change our mood, that changes our focus, that changes our priority, you know, and it gets us confused, guess what? We have to work through that. Now, suppose I'm doing that every day. I do it for 10 days. We got 10 days of work to do. But if I've been using these drugs for 5 years, I got five more years of work to do. This is what you all need to understand, and this is why she's having this discussion, like she stated, so we can figure out, you know, what it is that we're dealing with and what it is or what options do we have. And as she stated, we'll be coming to Philly. You know, God be willing, everything works out, Empress, for the 23rd, 24th, 25th, to train people with this protocol that Dr. Batulu Shakur started back in 1970, you know, when he introduced acupuncture at Lincoln Detox as a result of one of his children being paralyzed in an accident. And Yuri Kochiyama, a close friend of Malcolm X, said, come on, let me take you down to Chinatown, and introduced them to that. And he took it right back to Lincoln that next day and said, hey, we need to do this acupuncture, the whole Lincoln Detox program. I was in Washington, D.C., and we were doing work with the Panthers down here. and we got exposed to China. And the person I was working with that had a program in 1970 had a gentleman by the name of Dr. Ku come into our program and do a trial program on the oldest guy in D.C. that was on methadone. I remember that because I was about 17, 18 years of age. I just got to the program. And they were using the acupuncture there. They only did it for a week. But Mutu Shakur initiated a process that we now know covers every continent, you know, in on this, every continent on this planet has acupuncture detox specialists, whether they were trained by Lincoln or whether they were trained by me or Mutulu or Dr. Trinidad or Dr. Walter Bosque or Dr. Beatrice Shadidi or Dr. Tatsuo Harano. Me and him were the treatment team for Dr. Shakur. These are the individuals who are pioneers at putting this protocol together. So all of you all need to bring that training to your city. You know, and we will train 15 people at a WAP, you know, and we will teach them this acupuncture protocol that can not only deal with the fentanyl, but it can also deal with the fear, the anger, the trauma, the abuse that our women go through. You know, it's, you know, we had a death with one of the members of the collective. Their cousin, I'm sorry, their brother-in-law was shot. And I went over to the house and treated the mother, the sisters, treated everybody, and they were able to get through the funeral, you know, because the acupuncture deals with grief, family, and we've been dealing with grief ever since them crackers came over to Africa. You know, we've been grieving. You know, a lot of times we don't even have time to grieve. I was talking to a couple of my comrades, you know, the other day, about a week or so ago, you know, after we lost Sekou, and I said, man, this is tough. I said, you know, but hey, Baraka Kai, sometimes us soldiers don't even have time to grief, you know, and this is okay. The situation that they put black people in here in America. So we got to stop, take a deep breath, realize, you know, that they're not going to stop and that we have to stand up to deal with what we see as a drug-oriented society.
Absolutely. Ashe, Dr. Kokai. Listen, I want to bring in my sister Janae. She is one of our coordinators for the D.C. area there for the upcoming Million Woman World March. That, again, family, will be taking place in Washington, D.C. in October. We'll be able to give you some specifics very, very soon because we're getting ready to go and fill out the necessary paperwork very soon. But in the meantime, I want to bring in Sister Janae because they just did something today, Dr. Kokai, which was a that she oftentimes do, and that is, of course, providing food and other kinds of things. Sister Janae, you want to share a little bit of that with us today? And the reason why I want to connect the two of you, and I know you're already connected, because I'm thinking maybe for October – and we have plenty of time to plan, Sister Janae. Maybe this working with Dr. Kokai can also be one of the workshops or other kinds of things. Because during that entire week, we're going to be doing different kinds of things. But I'm going to open the mic up to Sister Janae.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Janae.
We were working together today, Dr. Kokai.
Okay.
We worked together all
Oh, Janae, what's up?
We're in the same place. I just cooked all the food. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What's up, sis?
And Dr. Kapai and his team came out, and they helped us. They did their thing with the acupuncture. Just everything Dr. Kapai said, he said it all. You know, our people are really sick. This drug has got a hold on our people. These drugs, like, we were literally in the middle of two memorials, like, you know, flowers here, somebody died here, they had just had a funeral, I mean, early today, and it was like the guy had just got killed coming out of the gas station, so he didn't even know what hit him, he shot there, and I'm looking like, don't get it twisted. We here, but we still in Southeast D.C.
That's right.
And I tell you, we did, Dr. Scott. We fed over 150 people. I know, at least.
Wow.
At least.
And
that's
we gave
right.
them hot bags, clothes,
And yep. He didn't, you know, well, nobody was mean or rude, but they still came with aggression. But after they got their acupuncture, it was smooth. You could drop the pee in that park and wouldn't nobody acting up. You know,
that's right.
It was,
that's right.
So it was a very successful event. You know, and I hate I didn't get my treatment because I was serving food, but...
That's right.
Hey,
Janae and them. Hey, Empress, Janae and them. Janae and them is one. Janae and them one of the baddest crews in Washington D.C. That sister is one of the hardest working sisters in show business. We get over to the mosque, she's still in there cooking. I say, okay, where's my vegan stuff? I got you, Dr. Sky, right here. You know, and she's whipping it up in there, and the food. The people in the community was like, hey, when y'all coming back? Because, you know, as we always say at home, Janae put her foot in that pot, okay? She loves them people, and them people love her. Thank you, Janae, so much, and thank you all always for asking us to come out and work with you all. It's our honor every time. Thank you all so much.
Yes, we enjoy it. We, you know, like I said, in the summertime, we usually try to do it once a month. We had planned on doing like a Black Love Sunday and stuff, you know, Black Love Joy Sunday or something to benefit where we do this type of thing and invite other people to come out. And, you know, I would like to see more services offered to the community, especially in Southeast. More, I got my little nephew who is they making noise. So sit down, baby. But I would like to see more people come into the community instead of just criticizing them and actually come and help them and treat them. You know, like, these are our people.
Yeah.
Like you say, they slump down, they laying on the sidewalk. I mean, I have never, like, when I came to D.C., I thought this was the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Right.
A third world country over here in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
It literally is. It is a terrible condition that our people are living in, and they sick. And but we trying to, but Dr. Kakaya is healing them. I want y'all to come and at least witness it. You have to see it for yourself. The brother he was talking about, we thought we were going to have to beat this dude up.
That's right.
About today's program event, and wow. One quick question, did you get any pictures or was there any taping done, any videoing?
This picture.
Okay.
Yep.
About community involvement, that one-on-one is nothing like it, nothing like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's good that we're able to use technology and all of that. It's a wonderful thing because, you know, it gets some stuff done, but it ain't nothing like being amongst the people interacting with that one-on-one. So Sister Janae, thank you. Mentioned something, and the same thing is here, Dr. Kokai. There's some kind of beer or liquor store all in the hood. When that, you can always find that.
Every corner. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it's by design. It's by design. And here in D.C., in the white community, you got to go to the highway to get to a liquor store. But, you know, in our community, either direction, you're going to run into a liquor store, and then the next block is another one that says Ben Wine. And this is all by design. We were talking about this same thing, Empress, as you very well know. Back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the same conditions existed then, and they've just been, you know, perpetuated even more through the years and really being done in a very, very scientific, systematic way. You know, they're doing this with these drugs, you know, the fentanyl and the vaccines and all the other drugs that are being regulated by all of these national organizations, the World Health Organization. You have the CEPI organization. You know, you have the Australian organization that's dealing with vaccine preparedness, you know, and out of Australia, you know, the European Council of Health and Vaccines. There's so many different coalitions that have got the Bill Gates Foundation. All of them, the Rockefeller Foundation, all of them are actually involved in this process of genocide. I'm sorry, worldwide genocide, because they said they had to cut the population, what, 2-3 billion, you know, and they're doing a pretty good job at it, family. So all of you all better watch yourselves in terms of the food. You know, Empress talked about it earlier, our diet. So when we do these lectures and these workshops around acupuncture and drugs, when we talk about drugs, you talk about food now. You know, Bilal always opens up our programs and talks about, you know, from the 60s up to now, we were just talking about drugs and alcohol and PCP and fentanyl and this and that. We have to include in that the food that we're eating. So the food that they fed today was halal. You know, it was, you know, it was no pork was involved, no whole bunch of, you know, bad sugars and, you know, all of those things. You know, masjid, you know, Rashidan, for those who need to know, Masjid Rashidan also needs your help. So Janae is not saying it, but I'm saying it, that Masjid Rashidan needs your help. They need financial support. They need technical support, administrative support, any way that you can help this facility, this masjid in the community that is a beacon in southeast, I'm sorry, in northeast, right across the street from one of the largest projects, you know, in Washington, D.C., and those young, and those people are always in and out of that center over there with Janae and Imam Ali. So, again, family that's listening, Masjid Rashidan, make sure that you look them up and send them some money, send them some prayers, you know, et cetera, so that Janae and them can keep doing the work that they're doing.
Ashe, ashe. Good thanks, Baba. All right, family. Well, listen, you heard it right here, and we're going to ask Dr. Kokai to give you some contact information, of course, via email and or through the website. Before you do, Baba, listen, I wanted to mention, because I think, again, it's very important that folks know about the Black Acupuncture Advisory Group. Could you just share a little bit about that?
Surely. When Dr. Shakur left Lincoln, you know, there was a whole bunch of, you know, issues with Lincoln. They murdered our doctor, Dr. Richard Taft, up there. Dr. Peter Bourne came from the White House to check us out up there, saying that we were misappropriating funds. Why? We weren't using the methadone. Then we were using the acupuncture. They're not spending the money, you know, and they came on the tour, and they found that doctor dead in there where they murdered him and gave him a hot shot of dope, Dr. Richard Taft, who was the great-grandson of President Taft. So they don't really care. We know that, you know. So Matuli Shakur left Lincoln at that point in 79, and then, of course, the Osada Shakur and Brinks thing started. But when he left, he opened up Banner, the Black Acupuncturist Advisory Association of North America, and the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. Right after that, of course, that situation took place with Osada Shakur and some other things, and Matuli went underground. And it's been underground that whole while. But other people picked up the rod and continue to do that work, Dr. Trinidad and everybody, over the years, and I put together the ADS Collective. Dr. Shakur, about 5 years ago, was approached by Dr. Tatsuo Harano, again, who was on Dr. Shakur's treatment team. Me and him were Dr. Shakur's treatment team when he came home, and said, hey, what you think? And Dr. Toronto said, Harano said, we need to start linking back up again. I'm sorry, we need to start Banner. So for the last 4 or 5 years, Empress, we've been working very hard, gathering the information, fighting with RS, fighting with the government to gather all of the materials for Banner, and we finally got it, and we've reincorporated the Black Acupuncturist Advisory Association of North America. So everybody on this call, please go to Banner.com. That's B-triple-A. That's B-triple-A-N-A. That's B-A-A-A-N-A. That's the Black Acupuncturist Advisory Association of North America.com. When you go to that website, please register, as we're putting together our membership, and we're also putting together our certification programs that we'll be implementing in the next years or two to follow in certifying people in many different areas, as well as
advising organizations, medical facilities, treatment facilities, acupuncturists, et cetera, locally, nationally, and around the world in terms of what approaches are applicable to their culture, to their community, to the particular problem that they're having. So that's BANA.com. And for the ABS Collective, you want to go to ABScollective.org. And if you have not viewed Dope is Death, Dope is Death, please view that documentary. That documentary chronicles Lincoln Hospital and bringing up to date the ABS Collective and the work that we're now doing. People can also contact the ABS Collective at 202-517-4262. That's 202-517-4262. Leave a message, and we'll get back in contact with you, and let's get some treatment trainings set up in your cities. And again, thank you so much, Empress, for all the wonderful work that you do. We love you sincerely.
Oh, good. Thanks, Robin. Thank you so much. All right, family, listen, before we get ready to close out, if you have a question or a comment for either Dr. Kokai or for our sister Janae, please press 1 now. For those of you who are on the blog, you can press 1 now, and we'll certainly bring you in. And those who are on Zoom, you can, of course, raise your hand. All right, so with that said, and again, family, remember, unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, some of this is coming to your community in some kind of way.
That's right.
I hate to say it, and I wish I didn't have to say it, but, you know, in this day and age, we can be a bit more prepared for certain things. We saw crack cocaine coming, but, you know, at the same time, it hit us, and we really, you know, just had to deal with that right then and there. We see we see the writing on the wall now with what is about to come. Again, there's no way that they're going to allow that kind of devastation to take place in their community and not at some you've got to know they're going to be bringing something. And so we kind of see this now as it being kind of, Dr. Kukai, kind of like a trial run of certain things. Because time I turn around, they got like a new something, you know. It's not just fentanyl, it's track, and they got some other stuff on too. So I think they're just kind of waiting to see, like, okay, which one of this really works the best for them or whatever. And lastly, I also say this. People kind of know that COVID, and y'all, unfortunately, those of you who took that shot, I'm just saying, some of that stuff was trial run. They didn't know what that was going to do. It was to see what the reaction was going to be, particularly to a certain type of biological structure. Now, remember, crack cocaine was a designer drug.
Designer.
You know what that means?
That's right.
It's designed.
That's right.
They make sure that they are making that stuff be a certain kind of way for a specific kind of reason, usually for a specific group of people.
So specifically, no doubt. There's one drug, Empress, before I take that questions or whatever, there's one drug, my mentee was over in Africa, in Ghana, about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And there's a drug over there called Kush. Kush, everybody look it up. It's called Kush. And this drug, like Empress stated, is a combination. This is how crazy it is. A combination of any drug. They'll mix heroin and cocaine and fentanyl and ecstasy and prescription drugs. They will just mix it up, and they call it Kush. And the brother walked through the hood, and he said, we're going to do some training. The kids were running up to him and said, you're not scared to walk through here? But, of course, Empress, he's one of our people. So, no, this is our neighborhood, bro, over here. But, again, the same attitude exists over there in terms of people being scared to address the issue. So I'll take whatever questions and wrap that up.
Well, all right. Let's go to call. You are at 2274. 2274, your mic is open. And hold on. Yeah, it's open now. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
All right. Hotep, Empress C, and I like to send greetings to your guests as well for not only being on the program, for the work that they're doing for our people.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Brother Adrian.
Thank you, Adrian. Stay up on it.
How's things going in Baton Rouge?
Go ahead. I just want to know, are you all getting any pushback from the pharmaceutical company?
Well, you're asking me that question, brother?
Yes, sir.
Okay. No, we're not getting any pushback from them because we're not a multi-billion-dollar agency. You know what I'm saying? Now,
okay.
You know, the work that we're doing, of course, brother, you already know. If this work becomes snowballing, you know what I'm saying? Now everybody's doing acupuncture. Then they're going to try to come and talk to me and talk to you and stop whatever it is that we're doing. This is why we got to be fearless. We can't worry about the pharmaceutical companies. They got so much money. They don't, you know, at the same time, if there's a threat, just like Nipsey Hussle was doing a video on Dr. Sabi.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
exactly.
What happened to Nipsey
Hussle?
They killed Dr. Sabi. Okay,
yeah.
And now they killed Nipsey Hussle. Now the torch was passed. I'm not even calling the dude's name out. But the torch was passed for them to take that and say, hey, man, we got to do this video on Dr. Sabi so people can see that you can cure cancer, AIDS, anything, high blood pressure, diabetes. You can cure anything, you know, with natural herbs and diet and nutrition. And they killed Nipsey before he could put the movie out. They had already done it to Left Eye because Left Eye was bringing people over. People didn't know this, but Left Eye was bringing people over to Dr. Sabi's space, and they killed her.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to know that what you're saying is true. There is a threat for people who address these issues, but we're not worried. And brother, don't you be concerned either, or be scared of any pharmaceutical companies, man. Else we won't do the damn work.
No, sir. And I'm glad you went everywhere I went wanted to go, because a lot of people are not aware that they were individuals who were unknown, but when they got on national platforms like The View started talking about why not to eat meat, they got threatened because I know this from experience. I could show you emails where I've gotten threats from the USDA just because people said, hey, just don't eat meat anymore or even consider it. So,
Thank you, brother, for that. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Adrian. Yes. We got one more caller.
You're
at 8583. Your mic is now open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Peace and Black Power. How we doing?
Peace.
Can you hear me?
Peace. We can hear you.
That's true.
Yes. I was enjoying the show. Oh, man. I wish I was there in D.C. I know Sister Janae is always a beloved figure in D.C., and it's so great to know the need, you know, is being helped. And we need more people like her. So
yes.
I was enjoying to hear that. And so thank you also for putting some information out there concerning acupuncture. And, you know, I'm from L.A., so it kind of touched me. You touched on it real hard, you know. Dr. Sabi, you know, did a lot or wanted to do a lot to change the healthcare, and for Nipsey to go through what he went through as well was still, you know, it's still hurtful, but people need to know what's really happening. We got to keep on their legacy. So thank you for the show tonight. I appreciate y'all. So my name is Truth Bay. I do policy and legislation here in L.A., in California. And
oh, wow. I just left L.A. out there with Matulu. Yeah, cool.
Okay. Which part? Where are you at?
I was in Los Angeles over by Hollywood.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's where Matulu was staying with his son over there, Mo Cream, and they was in Hollywood. So, yeah, we were over there. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
But Empress knows how to get in touch with me, and I'd surely like to talk with you and collaborate for sure.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, we do have on Black Power Radio on Monday, we'll be discussing assemblymen David Richardson Jr. and the impact. And so I wanted to say, first and foremost, thank you to Empress Chi for being a pillar in her community.
That's right.
And the Million
That's
Women
right.
World March, you know, it's really something that everyone, all of us need to be a part of. And so we just want to say thank you for that platform.
Absolutely.
Yay, so with that said, Dr. Truth, since we do have Dr. Kokai, and I know we speak briefly, and I did speak to Baba Akbar about it as well. So, Dr. Kokai, we need to look to see to make arrangements to get you on with Dr. Truth for Black Power Radio as well.
Absolutely. I am definitely down with that. You know, Dr. Sabi, I met him in 1978. When my son had cancer, and I worked with him. Matulu had just taught me acupuncture, so I did acupuncture on my son and Dr. Sabi, and we worked on my son. My son just passed last year, so he stayed around for 47 years, you know, from 1978 when that happened with him. And Dr. Sabi is just, you know, a great guy. But like, again, I stated, Dr. Sabi is not the only one. Dr. Laila Africa, who's a good friend of mine, and I trained him in acupuncture. But all of these people have been doing the work, and we just need to get it out there. So thank you, sis. I look forward to talking with you more.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can call in if anyone wants to chime in, 515-605-9889, and it'll be 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. This Monday, February 12th.
Okay.
Black
I'll get your information from my Empress. Yeah, I'll get your information from Empress.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dan, for the work. Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Yes, yes. And also, Dr. Truth, I know, Dr. Kokai, you said you just came from Cali, but we need to also talk about the feasibility of you maybe doing some classes there, some training sessions there in the near future.
Absolutely. We have a sister out there who's working on that. We just did Houston. We just did Detroit. And, of course, we're coming to Philly and Atlanta and Cleveland and so many other places. So California is on our list. Dr. Hirano is out there. So if the training happens in California, me and him were just on the phone. And we're working on that. It'll be me and him that are doing the training. In Philly, it's me and Walter Basquet. In Detroit, it was me and Dr. Trinidad. So all of the people got the Dr. Matulu Shakur Award. There's only four of us, myself, Dr. Trinidad, Dr. Basquet, and Chadidi. I've been able to pull all of them together, Empress, to do these trainings now. First, it was just me. Now I have Dr. Matulu Shakur's cadre, his initial cadre, me and the other four people doing the training around the world. I am so happy and excited. So, sister, I look forward to working with you and doing some stuff in Cali.
Absolutely. Lemur Park, that'll be a place to be.
All righty. So, Empress, will hook us up.
Yes,
all
that'll be wonderful. Thank you so much. Lemur Park, we definitely need you out here. So appreciate
Absolutely. That. I'm down. You got it. It's done. All right. Straight
Black
ahead,
power,
like
Black
you said. Yes, straight ahead, like you said.
Sister Tanisha, you can open your mic now. Was there something you wanted to share?
Yeah, I was just wondering what part of California he's in. I'm more close to San Francisco, and I work with Dr. Truth Day also.
Okay.
And I've just kind of chimed in on the end of what's going on, but you know, I'm here forever. That's going on, and I'm there with.
That's Tanisha from the Bay.
Yeah, you say you work with the children.
We got to be smart when we got to be people. I'm actually going to start March 20th growing up me in my home and my kids, and trying to really jump in and do the movement correctly. And get healthy too. So we need to know where to get more of this on.
Gosh, day. All right.
Yep.
Absolutely. Thank you, my sister.
Thank you.
All right.
Just briefly, we wanted just to share, we work with youth and we primarily want to teach them civic engagement. So that's one of the programs as well. and letting them have high-tech jobs. So, you know, affordable housing and youth centers, that's really what our community needs, you know, and have to come together and make that happen.
Absolutely. And, of course, in the very near future, we'll be talking more about some projects that MWWM is looking to develop, and that is, of course, what we call Blacknificent Cities. One of the things that we now bring forward is, as we, you know, it's a simultaneous thing that we're looking at. We know that we have to do certain things within the system. We got that. But we need to also start talking more about what can we develop that is going to be independent. And so for our convention coming up and the summit in October, we're going to be sharing some of the research that we've been able to get, not just in Philly, but Detroit, Chicago, D.C., Baltimore. We've been to those cities to examine the city planning, but also other things. And so as we talk more about reparation / reparatory justice, we need to also talk more about how we can have our own towns, our own boroughs, our own townships, or something other than just communities, you see. We're in the 21st century now, so certainly with the Republic of New Africa, our brothers and sisters showed us what could be done 50 years ago. The Nation of Islam showed us what could be done 50, 70 years ago. And so certainly today, in the 21st century, we certainly should be able to walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, which means do what we need to do in our community as they presently are, but also establish our own. And so in the very near future, family, you're going to hear us talk more about what we call our own everything forever. That's one of our new brands, Our Own Everything Forever. So we'll be sharing more with you about that. Oh, by the way, Dr. Pugh, tomorrow when we have our session at 1 o'clock, family, for those who are interested in the United Nations of African Women or the African Women United Nations, whichever you prefer, and also the Commission on the Status of African Women, we'll be meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Family, get ready. This is Black History. Next week, we'll share with you what we have for our youth. We definitely are holistic in our approach for justice and liberation, and I'll say this. Isn't it time that there's a holiday for a Black woman? Well, of course, we say yes.
Yeah.
And next month,
sister...
Yeah, that's right. We have three that it's been narrowed down to. We've been working this for about 5 years. So now it's now down to three. And at the end of March, we will introduce to the masses of our people the two finalists. The sisters are going to select the final two at our convention next month. And then we'll present the final two to the masses. And then decide on the one. And then we'll move for a national holiday for a Black woman. Coming from the grassroots, y'all. Not coming from the government. Yeah. Coming from the grassroots. Okay?
That's right.
So we'll learn more about that. And here's something else that we'll share. It's this. Go back to your communities and let them know we are looking for our youth to help us in the designing of our first footwear. That's right. MWWM is looking to produce our own footwear, and we're starting with sneakers. And we want some of the youth to be the designers.
That's right.
All right now. So
that's
we'll be talking.
I want my play. I want my play as soon as it come out.
Guess what? We're looking to do at least 10 different styles. And guess what? It's going to be the Queen Mother Morris snake, the Harriet Tubman snake. Packaging, in every package, it'll have the history.
There you go.
Women.
Lord,
okay.
Have mercy, don't start nothing more.
Yes,
be
like
you
better
now.
Watch out now.
All right now.
Great
I'm
point.
Loving it, Empress. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We
have to take old Dinga Shoe and the Matunu Shakur Shoe. Oh, Lord, don't start nothing now.
Listen.
Ooh, can you see that? Can you see that Asada Shakur sneaker? Oh, my God.
Listen, we've been working on this for 10 years, family. It has taken us. And, you know, when you start something, you kind of want to see it happen, like, right away. But, you know, we realize that, you know, just as simple. It takes time. And so absolutely. It takes time.
That's
but at least we're
fixing
up and down. Really show what we've been talking about and working on. And once we convey to you some of the specifics, you're going to know that we do a lot of time and work into some of these projects. So, again, we're looking to develop our footwear. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Kakai, I don't know if you were on the week we talked about one of the next steps of operations for other products is we're going to put out our own jewelry line. It'll be handcrafted.
Oh, man.
And our first groups that we'll be focusing on is going to be sisters who are coming out of prison, who have come out of prison, and also sisters who are survivors from violence and abuse. That's our first training session. And so they will learn how to make jewelry, and also we have other, they'll also learn how to sew. So we can produce our own sewing line. So these are some of the things you will hear us talk more about at the convention, in addition to other things coming March the 1st through the 10th. And then, of course, we'll be at the United Nations March the 19th, hands around and across the United Nations and the world as we bring greater attention to the issue of all forms of violence and abuse, sex trafficking, molestation of our women and girls globally, but also our prayers for peace. That'll happen on March 19th. So when we say
that's
movement, right. We say MWW.
Right on.
All right, then. I say. So, family, listen, we're going to close out. We're going to go to our family in Zoom to see if there's any closing comments you all like to share. And then we're going to call it a night or a morning.
Yes. Absolutely. Actually, wanted to
thank you so much.
Let's go
March 2nd.
We'll go with you. And then I think we had Sister Tanisha next. And then we'll close out with Dr. Kokai.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Queen. I just wanted to share the Cash App for the Washington Community Center.
Uh-huh.
We really need you guys' help with. Okay, so we really need help with like trays and supplies. All of this money, it takes money to give away free food. Okay.
Yes.
So we give away free food to the community. We provide healthy meals, okay? Halal food. It's all halal. We don't do none of that piggy pork. I don't buy it. I don't bring it in my house. Okay. So we need help with, like, utensils, the serving trays, the water. Things like that. So if you guys could give, please give to Imam Ali at it's Cash App, DCSADAQAH. I can put it in the chat room.
Okay.
But please give this to Imam Ali on Cash App. This man does this every single day.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's 50 years old.
Wow.
And he gets up and he drives wherever you got to go to pick up this food to make sure these people get hot, healthy meals every single day. It's not just a one-time event. This is just one big thing we do in the park as a collective. But he does this work independently by himself every week. You know,
okay.
I cook now, but I told mine they got once a week for me. That's it. Once a month. That's all. and maybe on Wednesdays or Thursdays, but and I have family that I that I go to that come to me by the mutual aid fund, and if they need food or diapers, or I mean, we don't just limit it to food. We have hygiene supplies.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We have skin food. He gives out good stuff: eggs, bread, milk. We work with other community entities or whatever. The ICU Foundation, they donate gift bags with clothes, toiletries, toilet paper, snacks, all of those things. And it takes time, it takes money. All of us are volunteers, pretty much. We're volunteers to get this food cooked and distributed throughout the community. So we need your help and your resources.
All right.
You definitely need your help.
Yes, ma'am.
My organization is Jackie's Kitchen and Cars and Cleaning Services. And my husband and myself, we provide hot meals, and we also clean houses for elderly and people that are disabled. Or maybe you had surgery and you just don't feel like cooking or cleaning up, or you just need a little help around the house or whatever. Give me a call here in D.C., and I'll come and help you and assist you the best way I can.
Oh.
And I'll have foot that I still
that's
make
wonderful.
Happen.
No, that's
we got
right.
Transportation in Washington, D.C. It makes no sense that we have so many resources here, but not enough willing vessels to make stuff happen for the people.
It's
a collective. This is what we do. This is not just like the march. It's not just a one-time deal.
Right. That's right.
We do this every single day, and we're willing to deal with anybody else in the community that is on the same lines that we are, that are doing the same thing. I'm going to close out with this. The problem we have in Washington, D.C., and I know it, and I've seen it, I've been out here long enough, it's not that there aren't resources. It's not that there aren't people willing to help. They're not willing to work together. That's the problem. You know what I'm saying? They got everybody doing the same thing, but they not doing it together. You feel me?
Sure.
Not a collective. Nobody overseeing all of these organizations. Mm-hmm. So you got a spot here, a spot there. These people getting neglected. These people getting everything. You know what I'm saying? And people feel like these junkies don't deserve to eat. The kids need to eat. But let's get them all together and let's figure this thing out. Let's get it together collectively. Because nobody was turned around at our event. Nobody was, because you were this, that, or whatever. We serve the community. We serve the people.
Indeed.
Okay.
Indeed.
So that's what I work with. And I appreciate the time.
Oh, thank you, my sister. And again, before we go to Sister Tanisha, this is why with the Million Women World March, we're talking about a movement. The march or the assembly just helps us to better organize and connect. And because we're talking about globally, so for all the naysayers and all who might be listening online and I can't see where you're at, let me just say, y'all can hate all you want. It's okay, because we're going to do this, and we're going to do it up the way our ancestors would want us to. And bringing forward that self-determination, bringing forward that independent spirit, we know what to do and how to do it, and so we shall. And so, again, this is why when we have our meetings, we tell folks, we're not there to talk about religion. We're not there to talk about anything other than, for the most part, let's put it that way. And that doesn't negate spirituality, so let me be real clear about that. But again, we understand that division has come about too much, too often, based on views of religion and other kinds of things. So for our organizing sessions, we are not engaging in that conversation. We had a situation last week, Sister Jade, I think you can recall, I think Dr. True. And again, and it's all good because we want our people to grow and develop. But at the same time, I have to reiterate that we are all spiritual in some way or another, and we don't want to step on each other's toes or, you know, do stuff or say stuff that might be offensive. So I always let people know, let's go into these sessions with the concept of solution orientation. As Sister Janae just said, we got work to do. That has to be our main focus. Whatever one believes, we say, bring it. Put it into practice. Show us what that is. Don't talk about it. Do it. That's what we're talking about in our organizing techniques. So we're going to go to Sister Natasha. You have something to share with us before we close out?
It's Nisha. I was just saying how I can relate to what she was saying. That's pretty much going on, I want to say, everywhere, you know. We got a lot of people in these areas that's not getting a job done, that's putting those monies elsewhere and practicing, you know, serving who they want to serve, who help who they want to help. And, you know, that's just pretty much, that's in California too. I'll get away with where I go, where I live at. So right now, I'm just working out, figuring out a way how to work behind the scenes in my town, because it's a lot of vultures here that I know that's going when I go right for the kids' Trinity that's doing otherwise. And, you know, and I know what to do and I know what they've done. And so, you know, I'm kind of like a little enemy out here in my own town, because I'm the one who has a pure heart out here that's going to do the right thing. But I have a lot of pure hearts along with me that stepped forward, that came in my living room this morning, yesterday, on my line, you know, and got some good movements behind to keep this pushing. And once we do the right thing, and it's one of the right things in our podcast, and, you know, one of the right things for Tennessee Blue, young doctors and scientists and stuff that's, you know, that's working together, that's doing stuff with young leaders. So we got to start working together, like we said, in our communities, and move strong behind the scenes and still get the job done behind the scenes of those. We're going to try to shut down our program. We know who they are, and just keep them in our pockets on a move, you know, in different ways to get the job done, you know, because we got a lot. Look what's happening with our leaders. And watch minutes ago, had another Nigerian, I want to say May or something like that, a Nigerian bank, which is in a plane, you know, and crash. That's like a kind of Kobe incident, you know. I feel like they're killing all our leaders who come to California to do something here in Oakland. They want something something convention for him. Dr. Umar Johnson is on his page. Dr. Umar Johnson is talking about it, this leader. So he's another person out there, just shut down. He just killed him. So that's just everything. So just everything that you guys are saying tonight. And just
what happened?
Everything
you can move forward.
I signed up for
that movie.
Sorry about that.
He said,
okay, there we go. Sorry about that.
I was just telling you that before. I just had that. Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's more than evident that we must have our own, because as we continue to do the work in our teams, what we know is that a lot of time and effort has been put into, as some would say, making America great. And I'm saying we need to make sure we make us great first, you see. And so by organizing and connecting to our sisters, and do so based on the fact that we are the mother of civilization. That's who we are. That's what we represent. That's what is embodied in us. So we're doing some of that because, as some of you have just mentioned, some of the contradictions, conflicts, and other things that we have seen evident in our communities, including the misuse of resources. Some of that has occurred because there has not been entities in our communities in the recent years to represent anything otherwise. So now in bringing our sisters together, we bring that mother spirit and energy. And believe me, I'm sure you all would agree, that is nothing to be playing with. It's one thing that folks know about mama. Don't be playing beyond a certain point. I mean, we take a lot of stuff, but when the push really comes to the shove, you got something on your hands if you mess with a black woman.
Right.
And so to bring that together now in the context of fighting for our people, That's a different kind of reality, y'all. I think most would agree. Bringing that kind of energy together in consistency and a certain level of tenacity and courage with intention, that is going to be a game changer. And so we are committed to stay focused to the mission. And, of course, with that, to obtain victory all across the board. So that's what we're talking about bringing forward. This has not been done before, and that's why we're doing it that way, because we strongly believe, as it has been said, that if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, that's a form of insanity. So we already know we're crazy, but we need not to be that kind of crazy to keep just doing the same things. We got to do some things differently. And so with our women now taking a position, no nonsense, of not allowing ourselves to be disrespected, to make certain that as we're talking tonight about lifting up our communities, that also make certain, what did Brother Malcolm say? And I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of the most disrespected entity on the planet was who?
Black woman.
That's right. Now, why would that great, serious black man say something like that? I mean, he said a whole lot of other stuff, but he also said that. And so we got to take note. It's no way that he just said that haphazardly. There was some reasons for that, and he made sure that he emphasized that. And so for those brothers and sisters that say, you know, they appreciate Malcolm X and Dr. Khaled, and by the way, next week we'll be talking about both of them. We're going to kick it off. Our program next week, we'll be talking about Dr. Khaled Muhammad in terms of this being Black History Month. And for some, February 17th is the day that it has been said that he made transition. I personally do not observe that day. I observe February 24th, and I'll go into that at another time. But, you know, I was there when the coffin went in the ground. That was February 24th. I saw that coffin. A lot of other stuff that was said in terms of his transition, for me, it's still questionable, and so I do not observe February 17th. But again, we will have this dialogue next week, just as
2024.
You know,
no doubt.
You know,
we was there that day.
You know,
we saw that. Okay.
Yeah. One thing, I'd like to share about our soldier warrior, Khaled Muhammad. When the Minister Louis Farrakhan decided to rebuild the nation of Islam, there was no nation. There was no fruit of Islam. Brother Khaled Muhammad called my big brother Bilal Sunni Ali and myself. I was in charge of the security squad for the Republic of New Africa here in Washington, D.C., and he called us and said, hey, look, Louis Farrakhan is coming back out and wants to rebuild the nation. However, we have no security. We have no FOI. And we'd like to know, Baba Bilal and Dr. Kakai, would you all please secure the minister in his initial opening presentation at Howard University? We were honored to do the security. I was on his right shoulder. Bilal was on his left shoulder. Bilal Sunni Ali and Khaled Muhammad was behind him. Our security team did so well that he took us to Boston. He took us to New York and then to Chicago where he did his final speech, and we ate dinner at his house. Myself and many others, and Kwame Ture and many others were there. So we were honored to have been able to do that work, Khaled Muhammad. So we definitely honor him in his fearlessness.
Yes.
That's an honor.
Absolutely. Well, we will talk more about that next week. Of course, as we will observe, of course, Dr. Khaled's transition, and then later on in the week, we will, of course, observe Brother Malcolm's transition. And we think it's important to you know, to review and examine some things, because we're talking about Black history, and we need to deal with it from our perspective as well. So again, next week we venture kind of into some of those areas in a positive manner, but also in a more forensic one, because as Doc oftentimes said, if anything should happen to him, even if he slipped on a banana peel, we should make sure we examine it very carefully and closely and know who, in fact, is behind it. And so, again, it behooves us to do justice in that regard. And again, we'll talk more about it next week. But family, I want to thank you again, Dr. Kokai. Thank you as usual for taking the time to share with us and to help us to get more acclimated to this now process that we must now move forward in, and not only keeping the spirit and the work and the legacy of Dr. Matula Shakur alive and advancing, but also in that making certain that in this 21st century now, that we do the things that we know we need to be doing in this day and age, in representing our ancestors, and doing what we need to do for ourselves, what Brother Ken Bridges oftentimes called internal reparations. We're going to talk more about that next week. And you all know it was Ken Bridges coming out of D.C. area where he was murdered. Remember Ken Bridges? We'll talk more about that next week. He was supposed to be killed by the sniper. Oh, yes. Ken Bridges started something called MATA. Brother Kokai, Dr. Kokai, you still there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, do you remember MATA? I know you do. Okay. Yep, MATA.
Yeah, that brother was mysteriously killed.
That's right. And again,
By the DC sniper, I think.
Right. Supposedly the DC sniper.
Supposedly, right.
Our network was growing rapidly. They were focusing on selling Black products all over the country. Thousands
and
had become born in MATA all over the country. And Brother Ken Bridges was just coming from a meeting in the DC area.
That's where
he was meeting a millionaire Black man.
That's right.
Who had agreed to now invest the MATA network. They were making own dishwasher liquid, detergent, and so forth.
That's right.
And he had just come from a meeting with a Black man who had agreed to finance his next ventures. Supposedly, the D.C. sniper murdered him. We talk about Black history. This is Black history.
Wow.
Okay?
Yep.
All right.
It was no D.C. sniper. We know that.
Absolutely. In fact, you know what? With that said, if y'all just give me a moment, we're going to close out with Brother Ken Bridges.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yep.
I'm
going to
give me
some sleep.
and we will close out with the great Ken Bridges, who is from Philly, by the way. Give me 1 minute. Let me find this for you. Okay, here we go. All right. Interestingly enough, Sister Viola Plummer just made transition, and her services was also last week. I'm trying to find Ken Bridges, who was at the Million for Reparation March. Okay, I got it. We're going to close out with Ken Bridges. Family, love you all. Thank you much.
Thank you, Empress. Good night, family.
Brothers and sisters, we've been talking about reparations today. We're excited about reparations. It is owed us. It is due. There was a crime against humanity called slavery, and reparations is due.
But in a conversation that we had with Dr. Conrad Worrall back in January, when we were talking about the MACA network, a black channel of distribution, linking up black people that are spending money with black people that are making goods and services and working to get our $600 billion that are in black hands to stay in black hands longer. When Conrad heard what MACA was about, he said, my brother Chen, what you are talking about is a form of reparations that we have not talked a lot about, my brother, but he said it's a form of reparations that's called internal reparations. Conrad went on to say, he said, brother, this concept of internal reparations comes initially from 1993, the first Pan-African Conference on Reparations, and Professor Chinwezu in Nigeria coined the term internal repair. Dr. Chinwezu said that reparations is not mostly about money. Chinwezu said that reparations is mostly about internal repair. Repair of ourselves spiritually, brothers and sisters, mentally, brothers and sisters, economically, brothers and sisters, internal repair. Chinwezu went on to say, and Dr. Worrall coining the term internal reparations embraced it fully by simply saying that internal reparations is what we can do for ourselves. External reparations is what others must do for us, they owe us. But brothers and sisters, make no mistake about it. These two efforts must be simultaneous. We must demand reparations because it is due us from them. They owe us, no question about it. But brothers and sisters, I want you to think about this for a moment. We owe ourselves. Do you feel me? We owe ourselves internal reparations. We don't ask anybody for it. We don't have to beg anybody for it. We don't have to plead anybody to give it to us. We simply must do two things. We've got to love ourselves more and love our race more, and then we will look inside and do for ourselves. Are you feeling me? Brothers and sisters, we have to keep the pressure on for internal and external reparations. Today is a very different sort of a march, though. See, today, Viola Plummer, Sister Viola Plummer, and Dr. Conrad Worrall said that today was going to be a day that we focused on action. Oh, yes, we must talk. We must rap and we must clap. But brothers and sisters, we got to take one more step. You see, we got to take action. Now, MACA has come with a map. It's a basic map. It's a MACA action plan for internal reparations. We're not buying on this internal reparations. In COBRA is at the forefront of internal reparations and external reparations. In BUC is involved in internal and external reparations. D12, we're in this with the UNIA, the New Black Panther Party. We're together and united in the fact that we must get external reparations, but brothers and sisters, we are responsible for internal reparations ourselves. I want to direct you to an action step very quickly. There are brothers and sisters that have MACA t-shirt on just like I have on. MACA is a people, it's a movement, and it's a business. The people of African people of African descent who know that we must give and buy black. It's a movement organizing those people to be able to be involved in a business that's a black channel of distribution where our goods and services that we spend for everyday consumption, we must bring that into the black. It is not any way sensible for us to give 95% of our dollars away. So we simply say this. If we got external reparations tomorrow, and tomorrow was set, if we don't turn around and give ourselves internal reparations, we will give the benefit of that external reparations right back by Tuesday or Wednesday. Are you feeling me? And I'm simply saying to you that our reparations is not going to be wasted. Our ancestors have given too much, done too much. Marcus Garvey has told us we got to think black, be black, buy black, and everything else will take care of itself. Make sure, brothers and sisters, that you get with one of these MACA brothers and sisters, get information from them so you can get involved in an action plan. I'm talking about what are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do next week? I'm saying this is great today, but it will be a failure, brothers and sisters, if we don't take another step after today. Are you feeling me? But let's make sure that we don't end our reparations fight today. It goes on and on and on, and you can only do that with an action plan. I say to you, internal reparations, external reparations, it's due. Internal, we owe ourselves. Think black, be black, buy black. Thank you very much.
Long live the spirit of Ken Bridges. All right, family. Talk to you tomorrow. Peace out.
Good night.